This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
You should be at least a two-star admiral by now. Yet here you are, Captain. What is that?
It's one of life's mysteries, sir.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvind. We are very excited today to review Top Gun Maverick. I can't believe we didn't have call signs before we started this. I feel like that's such a miss.
I want to be Bob.
Oh, so we're picking from the...
No, I just want to be Bob.
Oh, you just want to be Bob?
Independently okay. I'm Seagull.
Platypus.
All right. Okay, yeah, there we go. Yeah. Bob, Seagull, and Platypus.
How cool.
We're just here to say... If you've been hearing all the buzz around Top Gun Maverick and people have been calling it like the movie to go back to the cinema for, the best movie of the year, the revival of the blockbuster, my God, all of those things are so true. I love this movie so much.
I mean, so I didn't care about the Top Gun sequel. I didn't think I would care about the Top Gun sequel going into it. And literally when I was watching it is when I started enjoying it. And I did not expect to get that much enjoyment from a Top Gun sequel that's like, what, 36 years after the original movie? But it's so good. I don't know if we can actually bottle or capture the kind of adrenaline that this movie produces or this movie creates, but it is so, so, so good.
Adrenaline, endorphins, emotional journey.
Everything. Like
there's a lot of stuff that's packed into the film. I love this movie. I really enjoyed it. I think it's my favorite watch. I don't know if it's the best film of 2022, but I think it might be my favorite time in the cinema this year. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Firstly, I mean, it's really beautiful. The other thing is, I think I was surprised by the fact that it managed to give so much emotional satisfaction, which is not something I expected. Like you, Arvind, I'm not like a mega, mega Top Gun fan. I love the original film. I think it's a perfect like exemplification of 80s cheese, of a certain type of 80s movie. But what an update. So I think the title kind of indicates what the movie is about. It's about the journey of Pete Maverick Mitchell and, you know, his time in the Air Force, returning specifically to the United States Navy Strike Fighter Tactics Instructor Program, also known as Top Gun.
And really, that's all you have to know, right? I also am not hugely attached to the original. I like it a lot. It's great fun. But yeah, it sits in a sort of very like 80s nostalgia kind of mode. And we live in the age of nostalgia on screen, right? There's so many remakes and reboots and revisits. I cannot think of one that makes a better case for existing than this. I feel like it's taken everything that was awesome about the first Top Gun, built on it, added stuff to actually make it a better film and a more relevant film, and essentially has every ingredient I think you'd want for a really great blockbuster film that's also not just explosions and fun and flights, but has a deep, proper storyline. And then, of course, it has Tom Cruise. And my goodness, that man can do no wrong in this movie.
I think this is easily Tom Cruise's best thing in the last 5 years. I think safe to say maybe 5 to maybe even 10 years.
Maybe even 10.
Maybe even 10 years. I think I want to describe like my experience watching it in the cinema because it's a good indicator of what the movie does and what the movie is. So I watched it on a Sunday evening, IMAX, full house, like just packed. And you know, like during some scenes, when it's bright enough, you catch glimpses of people in the audience. So I saw people like biting their fingernails and just having a lot of fun watching these scenes when there's suspense, when there's action. And there was this kind of energy in the cinema that is very, very rare, I think, nowadays. And I think that's why the movie works, because they didn't have to watch 10 movies coming into this and 2 TV shows to understand it. There was no huge buy-in. And those kinds of movies are extremely rare. It's just an easy access. Buy a ticket. Go watch a movie. 100% enjoyment. There's so much action. It's loud. It's big. So good to see on the big screen. And then it just came out after having a good time. And I think that's why the movie works. That's the kind of movie it is.
Let's save our Tom Cruise discussion for later because I think that there's so much to say. I wanted to talk about the a couple of things, really. So the storyline, because I didn't expect Top Gun Maverick to have a storyline. I'm going to be very honest. Yeah, I really thought, you know, Top Gun as is, I have seen people go like, actually what it was a really deep drama. And I'm like, okay, you can call it that. But, you know, I never saw it that way. I expected that Maverick was just going to be like some hopped up excuse to get him back and to have him in the instructor setting or in the school setting. And then let's go off and have fun and games. But the story actually does really well. There are some surprises. There are some ways in which the characters from Top Gun have aged and evolved, and the way in which their relationships to one another have aged and evolved were also really fun to watch. And you also have Goose represented in the form of his son, Rooster, Miles Teller, who, again, I don't want to give too much away about that relationship because I think the trailer sets it up in a certain way. But the way in which it is played out on screen was very thoughtful.
I think everything that it did to reference the older film was done beautifully and was done just right. Even the callback to Iceman, for instance, and how well they executed that. Definitely the relationship to Goose's son. Everything about it. So you don't need to have watched the older film. I think the movie actually contextualizes things for you very well, even if you have no attachment to the first one. But if you have, there's plenty here for you to get that hit of nostalgia and a little bit of Even just starting with Highway to the Danger Zone is such a great touch, right? But above and beyond that, though, I think it's also interested in something else. And I found that really interesting. The first film is all about like the brashness of youth in a particular way. This feels different. And I like that. It's nice to watch a nearly 60-year-old Tom Cruise contending with aging and getting older and loss and grief in a very particular way. But it doesn't actually take away anything from the amazing, choreographed flight sequences, the action, the machismo that's on screen. Machismo, which doesn't always involve just men, which I appreciated. And so that's why I felt like everything about this was so cleverly fitted together.
So, Lynn, you said thoughtful, right? I think thoughtful is such a good word because the movie is so precise. Like you watch some action movies and you know that they're sort of like they're making the movie to finish the movie. And some of the scenes are clunky and they are not properly done. There's a lot of CGI. The CGI looks bad. This movie has a lot of practical effects. Tom Cruise insisted that it had practical effects.
That like people learn to fly.
People learn to fly. They wanted to be in the planes, like actual planes that could fly. And it shows. And it shows that the action set pieces and sequences had a lot of care put into it. People who actually knew what they were doing. Even the way that it was shot, it's such a perfectly engineered movie for the cinema. Like it has to be seen on the biggest screen possible with the biggest speakers and the best sound possible. And you don't get that from a lot of movies. Like a lot of movies are big blockbusters, but they're not this meticulous in how they choreograph and design the action sequences.
I love that you said precise because I was just thinking that the mission that sits at the heart of the movie is actually very precise. It's a precision thing, right? Again, we don't have to go into what it is. The movie actually tells you this about 6 times, what the mission is. For some reason, they feel the need to revive it. But yeah, like it is actually a very, very precise thing that they're setting out to do. And it just occurred to me that if the action sequences had been anything less than precise, it would actually weirdly have undermined the story. Because, you know, you need to know that there is a certain amount of care and thought being put into it. The thing about how the movie looks, so the practicality of it, in other words, the way people's faces and eyes are distorting in the cabin because of the G-force.
And
right?
You feel it, right? Like, did you feel out of breath watching them do
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I felt like I was being pushed into my seat, you know, and it's just a beautiful thing. The ways in which the planes move, the actual physical backdrop, the space, the physical airfields that they're occupying, which they paid the Air Force handsomely to get. All of that looked amazing in a way that I don't care. I know Mandalorian and the circular stage and all that. Like, I get it, but I just don't think it can be replicated except with reality. Apparently, I'm on Tom Cruise's side now. Yeah, climb the Burj, do whatever.
I mean, okay, look, we've always been fans of practical effects, to be fair, right? And I think a movie like this shows you the thing that we didn't realize you were missing. Because when you see those flight sequences, when you see that it is, in fact, them sitting in the cockpit of the plane, it's them during the aerial dives, you realize how different it is when you see one of the Avengers CGI'd to fit on a spaceship, right? You don't realize that you've missed what it feels like to sit in a cinema and everything feels so tactile and yet so wondrous. And this movie achieves it.
I mean, it's equally important to say, I think, that I don't know if we're making this movie sound intellectual. It's not.
No.
It is not like a smut or, you know, it doesn't have much depth to it. It is big and bombastic and cheesy, and it is a big blockbuster action movie. But I think the difference between this and other action movies, similar to like Mission Impossible and other action movies, is that it is done with a very specific intent. And they don't care about like multi-platform going on to be, you know, watching it on your phone or watching it on your screen. It's done specifically to have a certain kind of effect on the audience. And I think they achieve that effect. Like, if they want you to feel the sound of the engines like at your core, you feel it at your core. Like, if you watch it in a good hall, they achieve that. They succeeded, I think.
I think so. And the other thing I wanted to say was, along with the fact that this maybe was something we didn't know we missed, we talk a lot about the use of technology as well on our show. And I think that this is one of those times in which you see technology used for good, in the sense that maybe you could have gotten the actors to agree to go for an aviation boot camp and all the rest of it, you know, 20 years ago or 10 years ago, I don't know. But you might not have had the IMAX cameras. You might not have had IMAX cameras small enough for the newly minted pilot actors to then be able to operate on their own while flying, because that was the thing that happened. And I just think that it's kind of a marvelous thing to see a movie that is so technologically proficient, in the sense that you needed the tech to be able to make it look the way it does, but it's tech and practical effects being melded in a very specific way, in a 2022 way, because I don't think it could have been done sooner. I'm saying that knowing that it was not shot this year. Don't come for me. We're talking today about Top Gun Maverick, which was directed by Joseph Kosinski. It is the follow-up, of course, to 1986's Top Gun, starring Tom Cruise, who we're going to talk about after this. Let us know, have you seen Top Gun Maverick yet? Do you plan to? We suggest bigger screen possible. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
To Popcorn Culture with Lee Bob Lin, Sharmila Seagal Ganesan, and Arvind Platypus Ubaraj. And together we are talking about Pete Maverick Mitchell in Top Gun Maverick, and just how much we all enjoyed it. We have to talk about Tom Cruise. The time has come. So there is no Tom Cruise career without Maverick. There is no Maverick whatsoever without Tom Cruise. And I don't think there could be a Top Gun Maverick without him signing on. There's just no possible way.
No, I wouldn't see that film. I don't think they should ever make a Top Gun or any other Maverick-related films without him. But also, I loved how, if you wanted to imagine what Maverick 30 years later would be like, this is exactly what he would be like. Mm. I loved his performance in the film. I mean, I'm unabashedly a Tom Cruise fan. I acknowledge that there are some issues with his off-screen personality.
Some issues.
I mean, I'm being kind. But as an on-screen presence, everything he's done, even less successful stuff, I've truly, truly enjoyed it. And this is peak Tom Cruise. I think this is exactly the kind of movie star magic that he brings to a project. And it's not just good looks and a cheesy smile. It's actual commitment to doing the stuff that that role requires. Because you watch him in this and you're just like, how do you do this stuff? Like, how is it physically possible to do this stuff?
He'll tell you. Like, time
he
and time
has
and
a
time
license for everything.
Show you. Yeah. No, I mean, like, I don't think it's any secret that Tom Cruise loves his work. Like, he puts a lot of passion into his projects. And even when he does the bad stuff, the stuff that fails, he wants to know how the movie functions at the core. Like, he's said it many times in interviews and stuff, right? For me, it's I love that the transition from the old Maverick to the Maverick that we see in 2022 is seamless. Like, a lot of times when sequels take a long time to come out, like, you know, 20 years, 25 years, you recognize the actor as the same person, but then they forget how to be the older character because they've grown and they've forgotten how to behave that way, right? For me, because how, you know, Tom Cruise is so consistent and he's aged so well, I can 100% believe that the Maverick we saw at the end of the original Top Gun is the Maverick that we're seeing at the beginning of this new Top Gun. And that's a nice touch. That, for me, that was like that believability helped the movie a lot. Instead of seeing like, oh, I know you're Tom Cruise, but no way you are the same guy that we saw at the end of that movie.
So this is the thing. They insert a montage really early in the film, like suspiciously early in the film, as a throwback to the original Top Gun, right? And they did that for a very specific reason. They wanted to introduce a character and they wanted to do it in a very specific way. And I think therein lies exactly the danger you're talking about, because sometimes you have the montage and you're like, oh, I should be watching that film. Like, this film that I'm watching, they're not the characters. I don't enjoy it. And I think that it's kind of a gutsy move, which is a good word to describe the film, actually. Gutsy in general. You know, it's a gutsy move to put this right at the start, to start the movie with Danger Zone, to have, like, the Top Gun theme just wafting through somehow every single time it happens. They know that they can weaponize nostalgia because they've done it correctly. I think that that's really what it comes down to. And Tom Cruise... I said earlier that there's probably no Tom Cruise without Maverick, and I mean that, right? Like, to a degree, there has been some Maverickness in a lot of his subsequent roles. But I also just think this is such a tribute to the idea of the movie star, A, and to Tom Cruise's career, B, because this movie in some ways justifies his career.
I was also reminded of how, for all that he's a huge screen presence and he's such a big movie star, he's actually quite a generous star as well, because much like something like Edge of Tomorrow, where really Emily Blunt was the centerpiece of the story, in this one, I mean, it's all about Maverick, but he also does a really good job of making a case for the other characters that are there. Even the climax is actually not entirely about him at all. And the rest of the cast are really good and actually given great moments to shine. Miles Teller was great as Rooster, but I also just really love Glenn Powell as Hangman. I loved Monica Barbaro as Phoenix, the sole female representative in Top Gun. And it made me think about that, exactly. Being such a big star and also being generous with what you give others on screen.
At the same time, right, the flip side of that is that you've got a bunch of like young actors and young people on flying planes, like actual fighter jets. If you had anyone other than a Tom Cruise inserting himself into the mission, I don't think that's a spoiler, like inserting himself into a mission, you'd be like, come on, like, you know, this guy, like, how old is he?
Yes.
And he's flying planes with people who are in their 20s.
Don't challenge me, Arvin. I'm going to take to the air. I'm going to take to the air and show you what's what.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's not, I mean, this is not supposed to be a realistic movie, but even then, suspension of disbelief, right? When you put Tom Cruise in a fighter jet, you're like, okay, obviously, he's better than everybody else, but not a lot of people can do that, not at this age, especially.
No. So we mentioned Tom Cruise quite a bit. I also think that the cast is pretty evenly split between people who are like born in the 70s and then others who are born in the 90s. And so on those lines, right? I really loved Jennifer Connelly and John Hamm. Like, I enjoyed watching them quite a bit, even though their roles are the typical roles you would expect a Jennifer Connelly and a John Hamm wearing a uniform to be in Top Gun. And yet they both did it really kind of committedly. I think that they were both good actors and therefore really convincing in a weirdly subtle way in their roles. But the young actors, Miles Teller was very good. And I think that he had a very difficult role. It's like, it's probably one of the hardest roles to do well within the context of the film, I feel.
He looks so much like Anthony Edward, though. I don't know how they managed to make Miles Teller look so much like his on-screen dad. Yeah, I know. All it took was the hair and a mustache.
I also want to say that I love how this movie is not interested in being political or geopolitical in any way. So
the enemy.
The enemy.
Don't
the
even know
enemy.
Where.
They don't know where. They don't tell us where they're going.
We've flown past the enemy line. Let's just go now.
Yeah. The flags
like,
make no sense.
And there's
sense.
Like both deserts and mountains and snow. So it can just be anywhere.
I love it. I really love it. Like, they don't care.
I love it so much because it's so, I think, especially now, it's so difficult to relate to American-ness, but you still buy into the Americana of the whole thing because you don't know who they're fighting. You're like, who are these people shooting down?
You go stop them. You go get democracy for that country. It's just like, yeah, all right.
It's not even that, is it? It's stop them from making weapons.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's
it's against
it
NATO.
Was.
Yeah. It's against NATO. This
go.
Is all we know.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to do honorable mention for Glenn Powell because you mentioned him earlier, Sharmila, and he was our almost Rooster, right? Like he famously auditioned for Rooster, almost got him, and then they actually kind of expanded and created the Hangman role just for him. And I think he justifies it with his crazy eyes and his like Maverick style. Like when I say Maverick, I mean vintage Maverick style energy.
Oh, I loved him. I felt like he was the love child you never knew existed between Maverick and Iceman. And it was such a great throwback to that, you know, in the 80s, this guy would have been the hero. But today, the heroes are this other ragtag group of kids. And I really love that.
See, I wish I knew that trivia before watching the movie, because while watching the movie, I was like, oh, this guy's just like typical bad guy, you know, doing bad guy smile and bad guy thing. So he was okay. He was fun. He was fun.
All right. So I thought this movie wrapped it up very satisfyingly. I don't want to see a follow-up. I just want to rewatch this over and over again. How do we feel?
They're talking about a third one, aren't they?
No.
I don't think I want it. This was perfect.
We didn't think we wanted
Maverick.
But
we wanted this. This is true. So I will say I'm happy with this. I don't need another one.
Mm.
I think same. I don't need another one. But you know that if there is another one, I'm going to be there like opening day.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But how's he going to up it? Space. Really, it
is
space.
Don't challenge Tom Cruise. Like, don't challenge Tom Cruise at all.
This is what's left, you guys.
Mark 75.
Right? Okay. We all loved Top Gun Maverick. Yep. We thoroughly recommend it. Go watch it on the big screen. I think that there's just nothing else to say on this front. We've been talking today about Top Gun Maverick and wanting to know if you've caught it yet or if you plan to. And if you did you like it? Did you love it? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.